can't believe Monday night and so late in the evening. There's such a good crowd. It's brilliant. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah,
brilliant. I've been down at the Berra for the last 4 days, and I just couldn't believe the weather, and the sea just is this gorgeous turquoise colour, and the sun is glinting off the sea, and I was saying to my friend Jennifer, I could just go in. I could go in. And she goes, it's February. But this pool of the water is something I always had. I grew up in Court Stewart, and the other side of the country, and my dad did swim in the Atlantic almost every day. So, water is where I'm happiest, naked if possible, out of my depth. My breasts going their own way, cracks, rinsed and explored, like it's a given, a marriage where no asking is necessary. I dive under, hair growing ecstatic, frondish, slower to turn back than my head, limbs unhumiliated, strong, feet playful. More efficient than walking, I front crawl, breath timed, pronounced, not slipping by unnoticed. This is alive. Then comes floating, skin a guest of air. I hold my palms up just beneath the surface, plying the tension as if they could lift the water up and it would not break, like love should be. Elastic, fluent, so familiar you can't tell if you're in it or out of it. When people say, where do you get images for poetry, and if we knew, we'd probably be multimillionaires, not poets. One of the joys is we don't know, and it comes from many different sources. And there was a very strange part of Prospect Park in Brooklyn where I lived, and there was a very deserted painted horses carousel that I used to visit. I had no idea it would come up in a poem, and this poem came in the middle of the night, and that's called A Donne, A Given. And it doesn't happen very often, and you're very happy when it comes, but you kind of think, oh, did I work it enough? But when they come, accept them. Painted horses. A small coronary of fear shot through me when you said you wanted someone else. I felt deciduous, losing foliage in a forest of evergreens, younger, more beautiful than I, with straight, supple spines. For minutes, all we'd ever known was apparitional, my ground a moving ice sheet, the bulk of it unseen. I wanted to splurge on Machu Picchu, Tokyo, saturate myself with sights you'd never see, we'd never talk about, and a great wall built up around my heart where you walked to get a better view. But that wasn't as bad as when you said you'd go out and find sex if I didn't give you more. As if I was a ticket machine and you'd paid your entry. Or a fun fair where all the painted horses spun round just for you. This is from my new forthcoming collection, which keeps being postponed because of funding of art and poetry. It's hopefully going to be called Test Orange, Test, Orange, and this is the title poem. And it comes out of a quite seriously severe breakup, and also coinciding with teeth falling out and finding difficulty eating and all those horrible psychosomatic things that come out of sorrow. Test Orange. I am peeling a large, thick-skinned orange. The rind gives easily as a mylid. It is the wettest orange ever opened. I thumb under the peel and the segments break, flesh stained with skin. I maul it, just flooding my fingers, face. I want the mess gone, the evidence of clumsy process. Isn't the method of breaking something open important? There is no kind time for unkind acts, but surely a soft breath can be taken before speech shatters all about it. A last touch to qualify love's fine and final etiquette. Then make it quick. You want the bite of blood, the thick emetic swallow, and to hide your mouth against the cold, the sudden hollow. The way we first apprise the fruit carries its eventual breaking down, the shy night body vanishing, the fireworks, or the pulpy blows of rage. Tufts of orange cling to my nails. The water will run orange, the throat will be an orange hole, flamed with nobler endings. I rinse the cloth, my hands, in our coupled bed, my wasted love, were tested for the will to torture, prove abominable enough. Thank you. One of the lines of the orange hole actually came out of being at Anna McCarrick, the Tyrone Guthrie Centre, which if you haven't been and you're an aspiring writer or a writer in this time to think you have to go there, it's an amazing place. And I was saying to this American writer, he said, what's that building, that weird little barricaded looking building? And I said, it's an orange hole. And he said, an orange hole? And I said, well, kind of a hole, but yeah. And so the word orange became the sort of joke, and so it's got that kind of unionist shadow, but it's also got the shadow of Guantanamo Bay and other kinds of torture. This next poem is about a British artist called Sarah Lucas. She's part of the British Art Pack, and young British artist, the YBA, if you weren't so young anymore. Shine on, Sarah Lucas. Your tight little legs hang like a fag from a dry mouth. No toes, no head. Who hurt you, bunny? Mucus yellow melons with their matte skin poke from worn sofa dreams. Your love is a burnt tower of muscle. Someone left your chicken hole on the supermarket shelf. There is no music, just the cold green pulse of a fluorescent cock and torrid tales of bonking without fizz or pop. You sit on the loo, dressed like a bloke, strong as beer, smoking. And this next poem is also based on a painting. It's a painting by Louis Labrocki. He did this wonderful series of heads based on artists, and there was a Celtic idea that the head held the spirit captive. And if you do a portrait of a head, you're somehow getting the spirit. You did portraits of Beckett and Heaney. And this one was just simply called Human Image. And sometimes when I can't find the way into an idea, I just stare at an image. And this was written after 9/11. Human Image. I'm looking at a painting by Louis Labrocki of a finger hole poked in wet cement. Slowly, a wounded, receding face appears, a grey mirage of head holding the spirit captive. The hole fastens into a mouth tight as a nasal, screaming. We waited for the images on television to resolve into fiction, watched blazing pieces shower down the column of eyes, kept watching until belief occurred somewhere behind the retina where incomprehension burnt a dark hole. How to carry the bulk and heft of it, this new way to think about dying. We would anticipate smithereens in the north, take the risk of living, not without regard, but unguarded, attentive, summoning forgiveness from a gap of light, a place that could not be set in stone. This is a long poem, is that alright?
Yeah.
It's new and I'm quite excited by it, but it is long. And it comes from, I think when you don't have a muse in your life, maybe you look at other muses and want them instead. This is based on the muse who was James Whistler's muse, who was actually an Irish woman. So the Jim in the poem is James Whistler, a painter in the late 19th century, and the Gustav in the poem, Gustav Courbet, who she left him for. And it starts at the beginning, sort of the beginning starts at the end of their relationship when she's being seduced by him and goes back and looks at how the places like the Royal Academy refused Whistler's work for quite a long time. And she was the model in paintings like A Girl in White and quite controversial work at the time because portraits were usually paid for by wealthy people, and she certainly wasn't that. Starts in Trouville, which is a French seaside town on the north coast. From Trouville, 1865. The season is quite over and everyone has left. The bathing huts are shut. The beach pleases itself. Jim, obsessed with news of Chile, wants to sail to Valparaiso. His eyes are caught on the horizon. There is no one in his paintings now. I've seen his back. I was his sea. Gustav looks less at the misted rocks, the line of sand, and more at my neck, my wrists. Yesterday, his finger counted each pearl button of my blouse. He asks if he may brush my hair. Some won't touch this red. Some it hurts because they love it so. I move like a flame between two drafts. Trouville has none of the sadness of London's autumn. No cold smoke litter at the throat. The clouds are fast and full and bring a change of light that never is the end. The chill is always gentler when you can be out in it. All evening there is talk of hue, of stroke, Jim fighting against too much reality, Gustav arguing to keep the visual truth. He finds Jim's pieces all too bare, sketchy. Can't he see their breathless plenty? Their search for footholds is just as real. The girl in white has gone, that fresh sensation. I'm more weary of the pinch-faced mother than I am of him. He made me last on copper, drowsy half on another plane. I am no ghost. Why isn't the living world enough, I ask? I spread out my hair so it could dry. The dropped flowers were my idea, They did not laugh the night. How we laughed and loved on that wolfskin rug, fur sticking to our limbs. I was 17. I knew that love had kissed me exactly where. That poor girl, I was not. Stay still, Joe, hold it. I'll move now if I please. I lost a promise once. Now I play it promising. The idiots cannot see the drama in the tones, the flints, the threads of white. Her prize, his cage. The old academy duffers have rebuffed him once again. The dying wounds for every trophy girl or blandest baba. The lost lily of her eyes. Millet saw it. Blankness just this side of disappointment sinking in. The rest went frantic. We're off to the Salon de Refusé. Next I will take supper naked on the lawn. Jim will lounge in his kimono to be in better company. I stand for months in that cambric dress, fingers winter blue, listening to day arrive and leave Pigalle. Jim hopping on his long legs that curls on him, hand on hip, busy with cigarette or brush and dancing eyes that feel every colour of my skin as heat and cold run through me, the way some feel certain notes. That sneaky, sinful smile that each time gets me going. He takes me more alive than anyone. Then dreamy, soft, no one sees this best girl but him. And if we're sweet and sad, I'll sing or act a scene from Strangers Met at Wapping. I'm in such fine form, I whistle. Jim has bought me a grand bear muff and an enormous bonnet. He loves to watch how they got on Saint-Germain. Then loves work in curtains light when I must be deeply still. Breathe when he breathes, a kind of mouth to mouth with eyes, the look of life I call it, when I see far back into him, my love, my brightness, to America, to Russia, and he sees through me, the passing glow we know will pass, and I make it art, and that has me in heaven. Giving the sea a dark skin of plastic sheeting, creased and creasing, rocking us up, then shrinking, budding the hull into hollows, then that test the miracle of floating. We've mere H's of wood, a bundle of orange twine, a hook, a feather, and a small lead torpedo. Large toasted tea cake jellyfish moor their bind to a subsonic beat. Then a poke and my line tenses and a flickering runs up it and the hook is loaded and I reel in, sensing the fish pound everything it's ever fought for into this. It's Big Hilda, I shout as if I'm birthing it, fizzy with surge and it buckles its cream and tawny bareness like a young sun-tanned limb. Standing to haul and pinion by sea legs of good fortune and land at half a metre of shining shock. I flout with achievement, property. Hilda reaches for a stub of wood. It takes three bashes. It's underwired mouth is sprung with air. She hones it up. Fantastic. Was all worth it. I bristle with ethics, trying to bathe in mastery. I have knifed private color from the flesh of water. Yet my arms are proud. I'm sexed with original drive and the species wing against the sullen sea. And Hilda, 74, is beaming. The widowed tailor's rehab. Widowed sailor's rehab. Sorry. The widowed sailor's rehab. Okay, I should put on my glasses. There's some poems you don't publish, but you have to write. And I think some say it was Philip Roth that said, when a poet is born into a family, that family is finished. So this is really about abuse, and it is such a recurring issue in all our cultures. We have to talk about it. To be a kid. In my sister is my brother. In my sister, knocking about like stones in the belly, where butterflies should be. So she thinks she's pregnant, child inside a child who's just learnt to spell the word jungle. A tongue is inside my sister, a wolf's tongue, licking the purple edges of a bedtime story, told at the top of a tall tree, where someone could fall out and not become a bird. So she clings to the closest human, her brother. There's a hurricane coming and a wedding, a lineup my sister will not stand in, a flash with handbags, hemlines, and hats. There'll be huffing and puffing, long phone calls in streets in the rain, a letter not sent, for nothing must blow our house down. I don't know if any of you had a jazz loving father who sang songs as he took you to school. We had a Take the Worried Man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but it won't be worried long. And it seemed a very good anthem. Take the Worried Man. Dad understands the beauty of miles clocked up along the corridors. No more roads for him. The one who taught the 10-2 of the wheel, the 3-point turn. The one who wants to meet a wall at speed. They wish he would rest, see what settles, like shapes only laying snow reveals, but motoring his body, eyes dipped under the feathery confusion, is the only way to steer the vast drifts of reason traction. My cap at an angle meant to cheer, take that off, they'll think you're weird. Where have you gone, my dapper dandy one, who drove singing that he'd not be worried long? His mouth trusts anything I offer, but this fierce homeopathy, anxiety for the anxious, isn't curing. The white room painted to look yellowy green, all exits locked and filmed. Will I ever get out of here? They say the drug's diversion will take weeks. Should I believe them or smuggle him out? Sack of foil muscles over my shoulder. Let him get lost in his own way. A fiction walking down to the cliff in his dressing gown when my back is turned. His point as lucid as the lighthouse that identifies the pier. I leave like an accomplice in an ugly, graying sleet, a winter more unknown than any other. He's left with no good coat, soft shoes, head bare, the last leaf on the lawn. All night I've asked, should I, could I return to hold a pillow over his fallen face? And if the answer lies in our pact to always do our utmost in any dicey situation to help halt the other's pain. Usually, when I come from London back to Ireland, wherever I'm staying, I can't usually write for a few days because I have to shed the speed and reactiveness of London and start to de. And I was doing a little writing workshop with my friend Jennifer, and she sort of made me write, and I had to write in that in-between stage. So I really noticed how my body was reacting to being in Barrow. This was written last year, first day in the Cathal Mountains. What does this stillness do to the body? Incremental expansion like chocolate weight. The green puts its mouth down to the water. Thin drifts come to blue the high lake's window. Eyes stretch to a 20-mile grey harmony. Sky shifts like music, the self following. Luxurious air creams out to meet space. Edges made alert to movement and noise ease up to drink the silence, but don't yet. Distant intentions wander into purple. Two more, do I?
For sure.
Yeah. Or I can do three.
Do three.
I'll do a long one and a short one, I think. Have any of you been to Jersey Island? Ireland's oldest cable car, it was a pretty terrifying experience. People say to me, what's the floor cracked with straw? And I said, well, the floor was cracked and there was straw sticking through it. How else can you say that? And I read much later, there were maybe only 20 people living there and there were 800 families, and it was on a very, very early map I saw recently in the North Exhibition. Cork, Dublin and Jersey, so it was a huge settlement. To Jersey. We were crossing to the island in Ireland's only cable car, a patched-up crate, its windows malted with salt and spume, the floor cracked with straw. We held on, knees locked as it jolted over the steel cords, then steadied in a heavy catch Jersey was reeling in. I prayed my mind be light, my body airy, worried about loosening the door should we plummet. When you signaled to an open pane to look down to the pale sea, with a moving shadow of ourselves seemed to attract spokes of sunlight to a square pub. It wasn't the headlands, the ruined church, the long unsown furrows, or the wave burst on the rock below we'd come to see, but this green star, its vehicle flimsy, worn, but its energy enough to ring the ocean's clarity into a show of underwater thistled light. As if the water reflected what air cannot, the pool of perception itself, making us sense that we could cast into the essence of anything and shine through in another world. Just read two more, a little short one. another one. This was set in Cashel Keelty, which is a beautiful walk, and there you walk up this valley, and then there's standing stones at the top, and you have to touch them. Cashel Keelty, a kloof green wood, shiny with rhododendrons, a path over scuffed roots, a smell of rain, a river white with tumble, boulder-edged, a stile, a valley suddenly, a bowl of mountains, the sky, a new wooden bridge, thank you, a track of beaten grass, a climb to the rim, a great lung balanced at its head, steady, each gene reaches to touch its start, this first art, the first outlasting praise of taking breath. So this last one was based on a book of photographs of water by a Japanese scientist called Masaru Iwato, and it's a very strange project where he's sung things in Hebrew and Arabic, French and English to crystals of water and then photograph them in different shapes. And it is this question, does water have an emotional life? Does it have a memory? Does it have a mind? And I've been whispering love into my water to see if it will change. Transparency. In Japan, in a laboratory in the hills, a man is whispering to water. A man whose wife has left him is focusing on structure through a powerful microscope. He's astounded when each isolated drop seems to listen, absorb the words, change like a face transformed by smiling or a splash of shock. He studies how words like family or betrayal alter the crystalline mandala, as if the vibration of his heart shakes and resets each minuscule aquatic form. He mouths eternity in Arabic and goodbye in French, and manages to photograph the crystal as it clouds inside like a blown fuse. Now others will believe him, will apply the knowledge he's not built for. Why these lexigrams appear, as if water held the capacity of mind, and how minds change when love's ear hears nothing anymore. How different from the first unspoken, this last not speaking. He's tired. He doesn't mean to murmur mercy. It's almost a forgotten word. The droplet he is viewing becomes a spiky lattice with a strange core, like a trapped blue-white sea of a cataract. His vision softens. He asks mercy for himself, from himself, until the mantra rises to a song from the southern shore his wife would sing, a song of waves and bow trees, whose words he'd no idea he knew. And he sees the water tremble as if for the body that once carried it. Forgive me, he says. He photographs the feeling.